Hello, rap fans. It's Richard Herring here. Thank you for listening to my podcasts, powered by Acast Plus. Do tell your friends if you think they might enjoy them too. And do come and see me on tour in my show, Can I Have My Ball Back? Go to richardherring.com/ballback/tour for all tour dates, going to lots of places in the UK. Some extra gigs added in London at the Leicester Square Theatre and the Bloomsbury Theatre. The Leicester Square Theatre first gig is very nearly sold out, so do rush along to those shows, London, if you want to come along. Some of the shows selling fantastically well, some of them selling pretty badly. Hello, Swindon. Do you know I'm coming to your town? Please buy some tickets. And I do have to give a trigger warning. I've done the show only a few times and 6 men have passed out. After the bit where I explain what happens to you during an operation for testicular cancer. So, are you man enough to handle my balls? Only come if you are, have lots of balls and are not scared of balls. There is some mild testicle trauma involved in this story of testicular cancer. It's mainly funny, though, and if you don't come, that means you're scared to come, and I'm going to judge you, so... It's like going on a fairground ride, so do come along. It's going to be very exciting to see if you make it through. I'll give you a badge if you make it through unscathed. Anyway, come and see the tour, richardherring.com for all that news. Some great Rahalastapas coming up, I have to tell you, in the next few weeks. The tour was a lot of fun. Thanks very much to everyone who came. Sit back, relax, and enjoy my stupid fucking podcast.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Leicester Square Theatre. Please welcome a man who's furious about Big Cook, Little Cook. It's Richard Herring. Thank you very much. Hello, welcome to... Thank you, lovely to see you. Much better than last week's audience. Welcome to another episode of Richard Herring's Leicester Square Theatre podcast. I was talking to John Tickle from Big Brother 4. Remember John Tickle? I was talking to Science from Big Brother 6. I think we've done him before, but I can't resist. I was talking to Spiral from Big Brother 7. I don't remember that. Do you remember Spiral? Doesn't sound real, does it? It's on the page. Anyway, all of them call it Rahalastapa, so we'll see if that catches on. Yeah, if you've followed my career for a long time, you'll know that when I was a bit depressed in about 2003 and living on my own, I'd be drunk most nights and I'd wake up at 6 o'clock every morning and watch Big Cook, Little Cook and get quite obsessed with it because it was all that was on TV, but I was also like hungover and it was sort of like very weird entertainment. I don't know if you know Big Cook, Little Cook. It's a children's television show where a normal-sized man has a very small man and they run a cafe together. Or a normal-sized man and a very big man. It's never described. They were really shit, the original two. But it's come back and now it's women doing it. It's the two women. It's not on, is it? That's not on. They can't change. How can they change Big Cook, Little Cook from that? They are men. That is... They can't change, and none of the men's right activists have got on board with me on this one. They're all upset about Doctor Who and potentially James Bond, and I don't know. I think because they're confused because it's cooking, isn't it? They don't know. They go, no, you can't. Oh yeah, but they've changed it to the ladies are cooking. That's cause political correctness gone mad, isn't it? Can't have women being Big Cook, Little Cook. I really want to get a kind of Twitter protest thing. See what men I can hook in with that. my other thing's disgusting, but I was just doing
I just was doing some farts that were so bad the other day that I had to go and sleep in a different room. And they wouldn't dissipate. Why do some farts not dissipate? What is the... Are there any fart... do you know from your nucleus? Is the humidity... What, the fart? What, it's a wet fart? And so it's hanging... So it's wet. It's just in there as droplets. Did you really study that as part of your nuclear degree? Nuclear physics? You tried to light them as part of the nuclear physics. I'm glad you're here, David. It's good to see. It's worth. So I've got very wet fart. So they're essentially on the way to being a solid piece of shit, is what you're saying. But it's all hanging. The shit is hanging in the air. Yeah, no wonder my wife's so cross about it. Some of them just fly away, don't they, Andy?
High density.
Yeah. I came to the right place to find out about that. Anyway, oh, I nearly forgot. I must thank my Kickstarter backers, Andy Sandal. Doesn't say anything about himself, but, you know, well done for inventing the sandal, mate. That was good work. Ian Daly, he invented the Daly. So, hi, Ian, and good luck to Daly. So this is from someone else, I think. Hi, Ian, and good luck to Daly Motors. Do you think he's just put that he wants me to say hi, Ian, to him, doesn't he? It's him who's done it himself. He's actually given me a line. Hi, I'll pretend that I'm not reading that. Hi, Ian. Good luck to Daly Motors, the best car yard in Western Australia. That's my honest opinion. I've tested them all out. And Joel Gethin Lewis, shout out to Pesca, Dave and Brains. Good, it's nice, and it's a nice little window into how awful the people who like this show are. So, it's awful. My guest this week is probably best known for his appearance on the Podge and Rod show, like Charlie Foreman was. I wonder if they're on the same episode. You'll also recognise him for a TV commercial for Auto Trader, which also featured June Whitfield. That's why we're here tonight. Ladies and gentlemen, will you please welcome Terry Christian. Here he is, Terry Christian. Come on in, sit down.
I was that drunk, I couldn't remember going on the Podge and Rod show.
Yeah, I'm sure. Well, I don't think Charlie could either.
But I knew that I'd done it.
Okay.
Because it was one of those where I thought, God, I'm so glad I'm drunk because I wouldn't want to be able to remember what I'm doing here. But obviously, my parents are from Dublin, so
right,
whenever I go over to Dublin, I can't escape.
Yeah.
I'm always going to end up hungover at the airport 2 days later thinking... Why haven't even got enough money for a taxi home at the other end.
Well, how was June Whitfield to work with on the Auto Trader?
No, she was great.
Yeah,
she was fantastic. I forgot all about that Auto Trader advert. Sometimes I do think about some of the adverts that I did, and I think that might be one of the higher quality ones.
I thought June Whitfield would be good. It's sadly missed.
She was lovely. She was really good fun, you know. I think we filmed it all around Romford Docks or somewhere like that.
Yeah.
And, so I think it's my only InVision advert. All the rest of them were for, like, you know, junk food.
Right.
That's what you get when you're Northern. You get junk food.
Yeah, I bumped into Michael Smiley, the actor who used to be a stand-up comedian, and he was on his way to a voiceover, and he's from Belfast, so he's sort of discussing what things he was allowed to advertise.
They haven't quite
worked it out what it is for Belfast.
Well, I remember there was a time when, I actually said it to Craig Charles when he said, you know, because when he was arrested and stuff and in prison, he said, everyone sent me cards. He said, how come you didn't? I said, I was hoping to get your mushy peas advert.
Well, it's lovely to see you. Partly I wanted you on just to get you and Charlie Borman in the same room and see if we could create a Lee and Herring look-alike.
I mean, when you say that...
Yeah.
I mean, first of all, I didn't know that Charlie Borman's dad was John Borman.
There you go.
I was so impressed.
It's very good. Do you ever get mistaken? You must get mistaken. There's a famous example recently of your photo being used on a... I don't have an answer for that, says Siri. your photo was used on a Stuart Lee radio show, wasn't it? Shut up. Fucking hell.
Yeah, yeah.
Get mistaken for him a lot? Or?
Me and Stuart Lee?
Yeah.
I think that's why people thought I was so fucking stupid. It must have been, for years.
Yeah.
I actually did speak to him briefly after he did a gig at the Lowry in Manchester, you know, back in 2017, the night of the Manchester bomb, actually. But so he was flogging his own gear. which made me feel better about things I've done. He's not just, like he's doing his own market stall.
He's too mean. He's too mean to employ someone.
Well, no, but I did want to chat to him because I've always been a fan of his. And then it was like, and he was saying, oh, yeah, I must talk to you and I will one day. He said, I've had people literally speaking to me for hours and hours thinking that I was you. You know, and I said, do you know what I want to say to you, mate? You did that riff all about buying Steel Pulse's album in 1979, right? Handsworth Revolution. It came out in 1978 in the summer. And you're the Brummy and the Manc. Get it right.
Well, you both are obsessed with music, which is, you know, another similarity between the two of you. And that's where you sort of started out, wasn't it? Your break into TV, which is quite an unusual break into entertainment, was being on World in Action, right? Is that true?
Well, it was a programme made by World in Action back in 1981 for the ITV network when there were only three channels, called Devil's Advocate. And it was all based on the findings of the Scarman Report after the riots of 1981, right. The summer of riots. And they got 100 kids from inner city Manchester, and I was one of them. And I only got it accidentally through a mate of mine's mum who did the school dinners with my mum. And because I was on the dole, in fact, one of my mates in here, he was working at the dole office at the time, but not the one where I signed on. And we'd spend a lot of time going from one different mate's house to the other, smoking dope. Well, I mean, obviously, there was a lot of unemployment at the time, and I'd got an HND in applied biology, you know, just in case. Yeah, yes, I did, from Polytechnic too. Which is where you went when you were too arrogant to work in a call centre. And it was kind of, I don't know, you know, and I must have applied for four jobs over a period of 6 months. And so my mum was moaning about me being in bed till 2 o'clock every day. And then her other son had been asked to get these youngsters together in Manchester to do this show. Right. So I just went down there, and next thing you know, we were networked for 8 weeks, chatting about politics, all the rest of it, and I just got spotted. Another person on that show was Johnny Marr of the Smiths. Right. So we were just talking about all the findings of the Scarman Report, high unemployment, blah, blah, blah. The actors about nuclear weapons as well.
Right.
All of that stuff, you know, Thatcher and how much we hated her. You know, it was just all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, and so you got radio shows that you got on
I got offered a radio show just off the back of being on that. And so I didn't know what to do. And then the guy who actually brought me on at the radio show, he ended up being the editor of Today on Radio 4.
Right.
So I actually, and then I did this, the radio show that I did then won 2 National Sony Awards, and it was described as a punk Radio 4.
Okay.
And then I got thrown in with all that mob who did The Word, who were basically young Boris Johnsons, you know, and I never looked back, did I? I think one of the big problems that I had on The Word was, other than the odd comedian, nobody had ever heard a regional accent, especially on a programme like that before. You know, the regional accents you heard on the TV outside of Coronation Street were basically Les Dawson. And then I turned up. Now, the problem is, it's a bit like if your first taste of curry is Vindaloo. You know, because I'm from about as inner city Manchester as you can get. You know, I mean, I was born probably less than a mile away from the city centre in an area of Old Trafford called Brooks Bar, which joins in. I was about 100 yards away from Moss Side, which was that side of me. Wally Range, just slightly to that side, and then Hume, that side. So it was almost like at a crossroads of everything that was great and cultural in Manchester. No, seriously.
Yeah.
Ian Curtis, out of Joy Division, was always on Stamford Street, 2 streets away from me. You know, because that's where his grandparents and his uncle and auntie live.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, well, you know, it was an incredible time for music within Manchester. With you were saying in the dressing room about all the.
Well, you've got to remember, Manchester was kind of uncool until I was 16 or 17. And you know, we'd had a big music scene in the 60s. You know, with pop acts like Herman's Hermits, the Hollies, Freddie and the Dreamers. You know, blah blah blah. You know, Wayne Fontana and the Mindbenders and stuff. And they'd all done really well and had massive hits in America. You know, Herman's Hermits even outsold the Beatles in 1965, but it wasn't a cool scene, it was a pop scene. And then you had 10cc. And then suddenly when I'm 16, one of my best mates from primary school and at secondary school, John Marr, ends up being in this band called Buzzcocks. And he's a drummer, 16 years of age, and he leaves, you know, even gets his mum to write a letter, to the headmaster say he won't be doing his A-levels because he's off with his band, you know, yeah. offers to pay for them. And he's like, you know, playing with the clash at the screen on the green and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, amazing. But your because your show was your radio show was it was you know was highlighting a lot of that music, right?
Well, we did everything because of where I grew up. You were either Irish descent or Jamaican, so you know we all love reggae, but add guilt. So you grew up with a lot of stuff, and then the older lads around our way were all, you know, big into what were called rarities at the time, then later became known as Northern Soul. And even our local youth club in Old Trafford, the two guys who ran it, they shoved the odd like Roxy Music track on for you or David Bowie, but the rest of the night, you know, they were just playing Northern Soul, which you don't want to hear when you're 14, you know. The girls would be going mad saying, "Come, you got any David Essex? Shut up and dance to this one, love." You know, because they were only getting like a tenner for doing it. But yeah, so it was interesting. So you grew up hearing a lot of different stuff. You know, so it was kind of... I don't know, and with the punk thing in Manchester, it coincided with wanting to go out, but looking too young to drink. But if you were going to a venue to see some crap band like the Radio Stars or, you know, you go and see local bands like Magazine, Early Doors, you know, that's when I first saw The Fall supporting them. Mm. And you go to them, but you went because once you were in, and the promoters would let you in because they just wanted to pay for the PA and have enough money to pay for the bands. They didn't give a shit that you looked 13, but you were actually 16 or 17. And once you were in, you could drink. So you were cool instantly.
And so, I mean, it is even at that time, so the word was sort of the early, was it the late 80s?
No, it's 1990. And the weird thing is, out of all the stuff I've ever done, probably the word is the worst thing. There were good elements of it. But the weird thing is, I did it for like 5 years. I was heavily involved on the music side. Yeah. You know, that's why it kind of hit the mark most times. But all the stuff I get associated with, like the Hopefuls and all this awful shit that they used to do, you know, and the studio events and everything, I hated, you know, I gave up arguing with them halfway through series three. I just thought, what's the point, you know?
So it is interesting that because I've seen you talk about it and it's
I'm embittered. That's
well, it's
what I
not,
am.
But it's almost like as much as those the Hopefuls was kind of piss take of, you know, people wanting to be on TV, but it was almost like the people, you know, the presenters of the world were treated quite badly by the behind the scenes guys were the kind of posh public school kind
of all of them, yeah. And it wasn't just your minor ones, it was all Westminster, St. Paul's, you know, Rodine, Rugby, Harrow, Eton, you know, and it is strange,
yeah,
because it's kind of, you know, I mean, they were nice enough guys, but they didn't have the experience. When I worked even in Radio Derby, the team I built there all went on to do amazing things, but they were actually good at what they did. And what I mean by that is they'd have a point of view, speak to you about it, you'd discuss it, you'd have a reason. With these guys, you sometimes felt, hang on, I'm the one with the 8 years experience. I'm the one who's promoted gigs and managed bands and blah, blah, blah. And I felt like, you know, the gardener on Downton Abbey when he says, well, I think we should plant the roses in April this year, you know, because I think the frosts aren't coming back. And he said, how dare you speak out of turn? Yeah. We always plant the roses in May. You know, so it was a bit like that.
Yeah. But it's weird because, you know, you're authentically a working class guy, like you say, from the centre of Manchester. So it's kind of, in a way, for you to be put, like, on a big TV show like that was still quite unusual at that time. Like, you would get comics who were working class, like you say, but I think a TV was a very middle class environment, I think, wasn't it?
Don't forget, I'd gone to grammar school, I'd gone to Polytechnic. Listen, that's quite good. You know, I mean, I was a fourth or sixth kids, you know, just outside the medals. What could I do? You know, immigrants, that's what we were. You know, I still lived in a house with an outside toilet till I was 12, you know. And in fact, that when I used to go to that toilet for a shit, that was the only time I was ever in a room on my own till I was 18. Right? It was like a breath of fresh air. But it's hard to explain that. And it does make you... You know, you are full of resentment in a way. You know, and it kind of, I don't know. It's hard to describe, really.
But it, you know, I remember watching The Word, and like, you know, I was I suppose sort of the target age for it at the time as well, and it was we always watched it. So like we,
yeah, yeah.
But there was that element of going. It was almost the first show that then Channel 4 did a lot of shows like that. So about 10 years later, did a lot of shows that were trying to be like an edgier version of The Word, but became too nasty, I think. Whereas I think The Word, it was sometimes a bit nasty.
Well, I mean, stuff like The Hopefuls, we only did half of Series 4, half of Series 5.
Yeah.
But we never relied on gimmicks and contrivances before that, except for in the choices of stuff. You know, you'd have these ridiculous arguments that go on, you know, really wearing over stuff that was just very basic. But, I mean, what I always used to get when I did The Word was everyone loved the show but hated me. And I go, I mean, that's like loving, you know, the church but hating Jesus. Get crucified for that, can't you? But you know what I mean? What's that all about?
But it was also like, I watched a couple of bits of it, an episode of it this morning, and it's very much that 90s thing where everyone is so, you know, it's that irony, everything's couched in irony, and no one's really saying anything they think for fear of looking uncool, you know what I mean? But that was just the 90s, wasn't it?
I don't know, a lot of our humour on that show was a bit 1970s carry on, you know, and it was kind of, because you've got to remember, I kind of wanted to be John Peel,
yeah.
You know, I didn't want to be, and so I didn't know how to be when I was on TV, and the only way I could think to be, especially to make that show feel like anything, was to almost become this cardboard cutout Scally from Manchester for them, because yeah. That's what they wanted. So I knew how to do that,
yeah.
Because obviously you'd have to pretend to do that, you know, to the kids that you grew up with around our way. You know, like when they catch you coming back from the library. That was a frightening experience, you know. Try and explain to your mates, what you got in your bag? Books. You know, like, it's like Burn the Wizard. You know, it was one of them. So yeah, so it was just a different experience, I suppose. And yeah. Then it was a bit overwhelming, you know, because it was like, no one expected it to be as big as it was. I mean, we used to get a 49% audience share. You'd get people like taking a mickey out of it, and yet every series, the figures went up.
And I mean, it's a big, you know, it's a big show. And I don't, it's very interesting. I was watching the Oliver Reed one, but what I found interesting about that, and I could only find the clips about the Oliver Reed, it sort of seemed, there was people larking around behind him, it seemed disrespectful, even though he was supposedly drunk. But Bill Hicks was on the sofa sitting next to him.
Absolutely jet-lagged.
Right.
And only came on because he was virtually kidnapped by Channel 4 because he was doing a Channel 4 special.
Right.
So he was such a lovely bloke, you know, we were chatting away, but it was just like, he just said, look, just feed me the lines, I'll talk about this and talk about that.
Right.
I felt really sorry for him. And then did we have a Russian model on?
There was
well, Ollie Reed.
There was a girl at the end, yeah. So But the Oliver Reed stuff was weird because like there was someone pulling with a dinosaur behind his head, and you kind of think you've got Oliver Reed on this thing, and
wasted as a guest.
Yeah, yeah.
He's got things to talk about. You know, he would have been almost as interesting as Charlie Borman.
He would have been.
And yeah, we get him drunk.
Yeah.
Or pretend to, you know, and then play all these tricks, which nobody would have thought was funny. You know, is that thing they used to do at the Big Breakfast as well, you know, where it's funny for about the first 20 seconds and it's like, fuck off. You know, do fuck off. You know, it's like, it was very, very odd in those days. But I have to say, you know, having done the Word and looking back on it, it was kind of better than I thought it was. That's why people still talk about it, you know, in terms of we didn't miss out on any of the music.
Yeah.
We did capture a certain amount of the zeitgeist at the time, which I suppose was important. But I even remember, like, the Daily Mail. I think I won the most hated man in Britain in the Daily Mail. I think I picked Fred West. Look. You know? He wasn't in everyone's front room every Friday, was he? You know, although having said that, they did, you know, the Daily Mail did make Adolf Hitler Man of the Year.
That's
once,
true.
Didn't they? Yeah. So maybe I shouldn't feel too bad about that.
So was it Were you enjoying it at the time, despite all of this stuff, or was it too much to? Because you did, you stayed and did every single show, right? You were in every series.
In a weird way, it's like once you're on it, you've got to ride it to the end.
Yeah.
But it was just such a kind of, yeah, it was just so weird. So I just hid all the time. Well, not really, but, you know, obviously I had my mates in Manchester and what have you, but I just hid away from it. So I hardly ever went to any sort of launch parties in London or anything like that.
Right.
And the few that you'd end up going to, just because you were down here, it was somewhere to go, you'd always try and find someone who you thought was your level of celebrity. So you think, well, who is someone that I can talk to about something, but they don't know who I am? So it'd be like Stuart Jobson. You know what I mean? Talking about Skids B-sides and the Armoury show. But yeah, I mean, it was very, very strange. And it was also strange because of the way you were portrayed by the press, that people would think they knew you, but all the things they knew about you weren't anything, you know, that you were like. You know? I mean, it's like I never, you know, I think I've had two half E's in my life. You know what I mean? I never did drugs other than smoking the odd joint.
Yeah.
I didn't do any Class A's. I was probably the only person on Channel 4 who did. You know, so it was really odd. You know, then people would think you were basically Sean Ryder.
Yeah.
And I used to go, no, compared to me, Sean Ryder's quite middle class. You know, believe it or not. You know, his dad used to come around to my house, actually, really? Derek, you know. But again, you know, because his dad was a script writer, his mum was a school teacher. You know, my dad was a labourer. My mum did the school dinners. So she fed more people than Marcus Rashford.
It's interesting. I'm sort of interested in that behind the, you know, there was obviously a conflict. I saw you talking to Samir Ahmed, who's on next week on this show, at the BFI, I think, with Katie. And there's obviously like, there was a conflict between the presenters and the production team. And it feels like the production team were just trying to whip up stories.
It was just self-defeated.
Yeah.
Because, you know, your job if you're producing something is to make it good. And the Word could have been a good show. I had a lot of skills, believe it or not. You know, yeah. People like Ned Sherrin were fans of mine. But it was almost like, if they just tried to make it more difficult, they moved the goalposts every week. And then they'd say to guests, thinking it was funny, give him a hard time. So the easiest way for them to give you a hard time is I'm interviewing some American guests and they go, I don't understand a word you're saying. And that wasn't true, you know. Even less so now with Game of Thrones, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
You know, King in the North and all that. But, you know, so it was just, it was kind of self-defeating and it was strange. I think it was schizophrenic in a way, the word.
Yeah.
I think that's maybe what makes it interesting. But even with Katie, you know, lovely girl, but the woman from Manchester that I kept trying to get an audition and get on the Word as a presenter, they didn't even audition her because they said, well, we can't have two presenters from Manchester on the show.
Yeah.
That's disgraceful. So, but I still think Carolina Hearn would have done all right.
I think she probably would have done. Well, it was, and you, with, were you and Mark Lamar, was it a strained relationship? Was it an okay relationship?
Me and Mark, very, very odd. Because, you know, spoke to him, got on with him, had a lot in common with him. We're both Irish descent, we're both kind of working class. I've never heard anyone from Swindon with a Cockney accent before, but maybe I don't get around enough. And we were fine, but he seemed determined to not be my mate. And then it all got built up out of hand, really. So it was a press thing. I think it came from his manager, Addison Cresswell. And from him at the time, you'd have to ask him about that.
Yeah.
I've done my 2.5 years of therapy. I could probably do with another 10 years of it, but yeah, ask him. But there was never a fight between us.
No.
I think I pushed him once.
Right.
You know, he grabbed me there. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I had to think, what should I do? Nut him, twat him, and lose my 250 grand a year job? Or, you know, it's just one of those things. It was just weird. Very odd.
And I think he was, you know, he was very conscious of his image, Mark. And
what image?
Well, he was sort of, it was cool, wasn't he? I think it sort
was
of,
he?
It was a weird. Well, he thought he, I think the word was a weird choice for him because it was like he felt he was almost on it, and he felt like it was beneath him to be on it, but he'd chosen to be on it.
I thought I always felt he had that at the time, I always felt, you know, he always had that air of sweaty desperation of like a bloke in the waiting room of a brothel insisting that he didn't have to pay for it. Because, I mean, he was doing that when he was on The Word. Oh, I never wanted to be on The Word. And yet you're thinking, well, you were doing like Camden cable television for nothing. It's like hospital radio. And there's no harm in that. It's a career move. And he, you know, and he did well. And he, you know, whatever. But I just thought it was very, very odd. Just the whole thing.
Yeah.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
And you're so, you know, you were so much the front man of the show that you're so associated with the show. Is it still something that people, is that what do people still bring that up with
I
you?
I did and have done and do other things.
I know, but I'm
like William Shatner insisting that he didn't just do Star Trek. He also did T.J. Hooker.
It's difficult. You've done a lot of other things, but it's difficult when you're so much the front man of something like that.
Well, it was just the press. I mean, the press, because contractually I had to do like 12 interviews or 12, you know, 12 interviews. And I hated doing them because everyone was the same. I'd go in there, they'd just make it up. You know, whoever I did an interview with, they never once reported what I said. I mean, funnily enough, I did a two-way with Piers Morgan, God, mm-hmm. right, on Good Morning Britain, you know, the day that Jose Mourinho got the job as United manager. And so I was outside Old Trafford doing this two-way and just basically predicting exactly what happened with Jose Mourinho. That is an irritating trait of mine. I'm often right. And because I just knew, you know, that although he'd been successful, he'd always inherited, you know, successful sides, had mega budgets, you know what I mean, and played dull football anyway. And I knew that United, after 2 years of Louis van Gaal, no one was going to put up with that. But at the end, Piers Morgan said, well, thank you, Terry. And thank you, Piers. I said, that's the first time you've asked me a question and not made up the answer. Needless to say, I wasn't on that for another 2 years.
Well, I watched you on the Good Morning Britain with Piers talking about Brexit. I think was it?
Oh yeah, yeah, Mark with Marc Francois.
Oh, yeah,
I enjoyed that.
Yeah, well, it was very much the Terry Christian show.
I just thought, let's just be an unrelenting cunt. Because, I mean, the weird thing, what's great, if you do watch the clip, try and watch Piers Morgan trying to shout down a kid who was a fourth of six in a big Irish family. Just was never going to happen. Especially when his only act is the fake concern dial up to 11, the fake outrage dial up to 11. I mean, he literally lives halfway between a sneer and an arse lick. No offence.
I don't think anyone feels... Well, I don't think... He finally blocked me on Twitter, Piers Morgan, after...
Well, he blocked me ages ago. Yeah. After that, actually.
Did he, yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, it's... You obviously got very strongly held, because I also saw you with old Tim Weatherspoons. Is that his name?
Oh, Ian Weatherspoons. Tim Martin Weatherspoons. Yeah, I mean, again, it was one of those where I've always had this horrible thing in me, where I do love annoying people as well. So I can't really expect to be necessarily loved in return. I went on, there was like a poll I'd done on Twitter, and it was about Brexit. And it was basically, I said, look, you know, if a business is losing money and having to lay people off because of Brexit. Is it fair that Brexit voters get laid off first? And it's because there were a couple of guys in Manchester that I knew were doing this. One of them ran a big building company, and his costs were going up, you know, because of the pound had crashed by about 18% and blah, blah, blah. And he had blokes around him saying, well, it's all Project Fear. And he's going, oh, fucking cunts, you're first out the door. And that's what I went on talking about. But, the kind of, you know, it's like they want to build a wicker man. because you're saying it and you're thinking, well, you know, what is it you actually want?
Yeah. Well, it's, you know, it's good to have someone voicing that stuff. Though I kind of wonder whether, in a way, it let them off the hook because they didn't get a chance to say anything.
Not on the Tim Martin one, you mean?
The other one.
The other one, you just knew you were never going to get an answer. And then it was just they were just trying to attack. You know what I mean? So it was one of those. And it was like Piers Morgan. Because he used a couple of old tweets he'd sent out, neither of which was ashamed of, and one was like completely out of context anyway. So it was just like, lord of old crap. You literally want old age pensioners to die. No, never said that. But if you keep saying it, you know, yeah, very strange. So it's become a bit of a meme for the far right, you know.
Right.
And it's just stupid. I don't even know why I went down that rabbit hole. You know, this is why I was in therapy. I've got issues.
But, you know, you've always been an opinionated person and, you know, you've...
But everybody's opinionated, aren't they? But the weird thing is, it's the Downton Abbey syndrome again. You know, you can be opinionated if you're Stephen Fry and you're seen as very erudite. You say it in an accent like mine from Old Trafford, it's like troublemaker. And then the other one I get in Manchester as well, and my mate Pete attests to this, is that he puts the accent on. A fake accent, as if you would. That's really going to get you on in life, isn't it? Yes, I'll be reading the news at 10 soon. In Downton Abbey world.
Right, I'm going to ask you, I've got a new emergency question. I want to see the answer. I should be asking everyone this. This comes out of a discussion about butterflies that I had with someone a few weeks ago. If you could go into a chrysalis, if you could sort of, you know, shed your skin, whatever happens, and you melt, the Terry Crisp would melt inside the chrysalis, and then you can emerge as anything you want. It can be you, it can be a person, it can be a thing. What would you choose to emerge out of the chrysalis in your place?
Oh, God.
Yeah.
I mean, I'd just have to be me, really.
Yeah.
I've got no choice.
Just come exactly the same? Would you change anything?
Well, not exactly. Me with less... how can I put it? I suppose. I mean, it's not my fault. I mean, we grew up in quite a tough area, so you carry a certain look on your face and a way of saying things that might sound more aggressive than you actually are. You know, because otherwise, those kids who see you coming back from the library are going to bat you and scatter your books everywhere. So, and then also, you know, going to the kind of Catholic grammar school that I went to, which was, you know, St. Bede's. So, now it's gone private. So it's quite funny. Now I get attacked for that. Well, you went to private school. So, yeah, what? The one that I left and went private 7 years later. But it's kind of, it was quite a nasty place. It was like Borstal with incense. You know, it kind of had an insidiousness to it. And the weird thing is everyone thinks that if you go to grammar school, you're soft. And yet my old primary school, St. Alphonsus in Old Trafford, provided... two out of the three cocks of the year above me, you know what I mean? And in Old Trafford as well, you know, so it was like, well, maybe you've misjudged that one.
Right.
Because it was, you know, it was a different era. It was an era when there was a certain amount of social mobility and especially amongst, you know, immigrants, if you like, of Irish descent, you know, so Carolina Hearn, me, you know, even Steve Coogan, although then, you know, I suppose you're back to grandparents. Just nearly everyone in Manchester's from that kind of background. It's sort of odd. Manchester's 40% Catholic. Mm-hmm. Isn't it weird? Imagine if they all actually went to church. Fucking frightening.
Well, talking about you, but you did try out stand-up. Is that something you're carrying on with?
Loved it. I was just getting good at it, and then I stopped.
Right.
Then so that was basically a show that I did called Naked Confessions of a Recovering Catholic. But it basically boiled down to I'm a bit of a twat, but it's God's fault. And so it was about the dark side in a way.
Yeah.
You know, the dark side of it. But quite funny. And then a lot of it about, you know, about being Irish. And I used to do a stills bit where I'd show you all the saints, pictures of the saints and what they do.
Right.
You know. And, yeah, it's up to you. You can believe it or not. you know, the child of Prague or the infant of Prague. I never knew that it was the infant in Prague until I was like in my 30s. I thought it was the child of Prague. It was some like statue of Jesus to do with somewhere in Ireland called Prague. Where's that? Do you know what the superstition is about the infant of Prague? So in Ireland, the superstition is if it's raining on your wedding day, you put this little statue of Jesus, the baby Jesus, well, not Jesus aged about 12 with a crown on his head, okay, in your back garden or your backyard, and it makes it sunny in the afternoon. Nothing weird about that, is there? The horrible thing is, I've seen it go out 3 times, 100% success.
Wow.
But I do remember for our Sheila's wedding, you know, my youngest sister, and she was getting married in a Catholic church, and my Auntie Mag came over from Ireland and bought in her suitcase a child of Prague, and it was raining, went out in the back garden of our council house, and we're going, what mumbo jumbo is this? Say, ah, these young ones, they think they know everything, but they know nothing, do they? Rah, rah, rah. Anyway, bright sunshine, we were like idiots. And a miracle, that's what they said. But yeah, if you wanted a good miracle, it should have stopped at our Sheila marrying that fucking knobhead from Gort. That didn't last. And a City fan too. Sorry.
So why did you, were you doing that in like theatres or in clubs?
Yeah, yeah. Well, I did theatres, I did clubs. It kind of did well. But the weird thing is I just wanted to try it out to see if I could do it. So now I'm going to do one about the word, and then I'll read it. Because obviously, I thought, why not do a stand-up show about the word in the 90s, and I'll show some clips and all the rest of it, because I am William Shatner. I have got no choice. All I'll ever get is the word till the day I die. I might as well embrace it a bit. And then I'll probably do another version of Naked Confessions of a Recovering Catholic, you know, especially now that I've had the therapy.
Yeah.
I've got more perspective.
Do you think the therapy helps? I've always avoided having therapy because, you know, will it help with the comedy, or is it going to destroy the therapy?
I kind of needed it. Yeah, it'll help. It'll help. I mean, I always had an ability to laugh at myself, but, you know, laugh till I cried.
I've always just used stand-up as therapy. I think, like, if you just talk... I think what's interesting, if you talk about the bad stuff that happens to you, yeah, in front of the people, it kind of does. It does quite a lot of the...
I don't know. I mean, but you see, the thing is that, you know, I'm lucky that I've got a lot of mates. But if I wanted, you know, my mates to talk me through it all, you know, say, look, you know, I'm not all that bad, they go, no, you're always a bit of a cunt. So that doesn't really help. So now what I want to do is find my inner demon and wash it, but bring it out every now and then just for fun.
Yeah, but you've got to stay being Terry Christian, even if that's character.
I mean, I will be, because let's face it, it's really served me well. I love all the people who do the usual stuff, you know, didn't you used to be Terry Christian? That one. Yeah. And then the other one that I really like is, are you that twat, Terry Christian? And you go, what's the right answer? Depends on what day it is.
And you've written books, right, about...
Yes, about, I've written books.
You've written books, but what is one of them... on Wikipedia it says one of them was going to be made into a film, but then this was...
Oh, no, the Oasis one.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I don't know what's happening with that. So the guy has just done the film The Pebble and the Boy, mod film. So he's kind of trying to adapt it, but it's one of those. It's like, I don't know, you know, I mean, it's... Because... I remember I had to argue for 8 weeks to get them on the word, right? Because they hadn't done anything.
Yeah.
And then we got them on two or three weeks before the first single even came out. And it was my ex-missus, and she was like the top plugger to radio, promoter to radio and TV in the country at the time, you know, for regional stuff. And she did national stuff. So she broke the Stone Roses. She broke, she got Prince's only number one. And obviously, so she did Oasis from day one, did the first two albums. Right. And Noel even had his contract from Creation Records faxed through to her office. His girlfriend, Louise Jones, who went out with for like 6.5 years, she worked for my ex-missus in the offices in Manchester. So obviously, I'm under pressure from every side to get Oasis on the word. You know, this is my job. Anyone from Manchester, if they're any good. Oh, the resistance I got, because we booked this... these lads of Pakistani descent called the Khalifs are all from like Rochdale, and one of them was from Manchester, who was signed to London Records on. I think they did a track called Rolling with the Cleaker. So we had them on. It was like the old, Terry, we can't, sorry if I do this kind of voice. But it's better than posh people doing my voice. That's the way I say it. You go, Terry, you know, we can't have two bands from Manchester on the same show. And I go, well, why not? You'd have two bands from London on. Well, yeah, but that's different. I said, yeah, you've not had a music scene since fucking punk. Right? So, but in the end, the band pulled out. We got them on. And then about 3 months later, they'd had a number one album and all the rest of it. And there's a big write-up in the Evening News, you know, interviewing Noel and everything. And then Noel says, and God knows how we managed to blag our way onto the Word with our first single 3 weeks before it came out. And I'm going, you... And then... And even the journalist who didn't particularly like me, this Penny Anderson, she went, well, as everyone in Manchester knows, Noel, God had nothing to do with it. It was Terry Christian. But he hates it. He hates it. Really, really odd. Very odd. You know, a prophet is never recognised in his own country. No wonder I'm in therapy. But yeah, I mean, the best one though was about the, because we used to do repeats of the shows in the summer.
Yeah.
And we'd use 2/3 of the band's performances. And they never included Oasis. Right. But when we came back for the next series after that, Series 5, we had a new editor. And he was going, hey, we've got to get Oasis on. They're the biggest band in the world. And we did them a favour by putting them on the last series. And I'm going, we? Right? And then it was like, and then he said, oh, Oasis aren't doing it. We want the exclusive, but they want to do later as well. I said, well, let them do later. It doesn't make any difference to us. He said, yeah, but, you know, we did them a favour. And so we want the world exclusive. I'm going, what the fuck? You see what I was up against?
Yeah.
So we had the world exclusive then of a band called Dog Eat Dog. Ever heard of them? You know, but just ridiculous. You know, and you're thinking, hang on, wait, you didn't want them on. You didn't even use them in the repeats. Now we've invented them and they must kiss our collective ring.
Yeah.
You know, TV.
Yeah, well, you know, it is, but it's a weird business. And I think a lot of those shows and a lot of those youth shows would eat people up and spit them out again, wouldn't they? So it didn't really matter to the people who were booking all that, you know, to the executives. It didn't matter who was fronting it. If it worked, it worked. If it didn't, you know, fuck off.
Yeah, but you see, they kept bringing me back, didn't they?
Yeah, because it was working.
Yeah, yeah. Well, but also it was really strange. What they would never give me was a writing credit or an associate producer credit, IP. But I've got them on image rights. So it's always lovely to see a clip of myself on the telly. No one else had it, you know. So, so there's still that. Yeah. I still have that. But, yeah, I mean, it was a strange time. I mean, it was quite... It was sort of a bit PTSD in a weird way because of what you were dealing with for, like, 5 years, solid.
Yeah.
You know, because, it wasn't normal.
No.
Do you know what I mean? And every time you do an interview in the press and blah, 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 then your mum and dad would be... You know, because they used to go down the railway club in Old Trafford. That's where they went. Or the ex-servicemen's, which was always interesting for me dad, you know, because he was from Dublin and came over literally the week after VJ Day.
Right.
You know, and I used to say to him, Dad, if they ask you what unit you were in World War II, what do you say? And he'd say, oh, just tell them I was in the Heugo Scheutz. But, yeah, so...
And how was Celebrity Big Brother?
Surprisingly relaxing, because I had two young kids you know, at the time. It was sort of weird to be cut off for 3 weeks. And then I knew some of the people. So I knew Tina Malone. I'd met Coolio before, although he couldn't remember. But then why would he? I'd met Ulrika once. So, you know, yeah, it was weird. But it was quite good fun, really.
Yeah.
You know, again, when you're from a big family... Like, it gives you a bit of an advantage because you're used to everyone. You know, first of all, you've got three older brothers and sisters all being a bit horrible to you, although my older sister did die, you know, she died quite young. But you're always, like, bullied a bit anyway. And there would always be some big argument or drama going on around you, so you could just sort of sit back and let it go and throw your own niggle in every now and then, you know, just to sort of, feed the flames.
Yeah.
You know, so yeah, so it was quite good fun doing Celebrity Big Brother.
Okay,
I mean, I could tell you, I don't know if it's suitable for consumption. There is a very funny story around that, but
I reckon it's suitable. For
yeah, but it involves using bad words.
That's all right. You're allowed to use bad words.
Okay, the weird thing is, we were the okay, right? Well, you can cut this out, by the way.
Okay,
But we were the first Big Brother after the Shilpa Shetty one. And they'd taken a year off because of racism. So we're in, and then up late at night, it was always me and Coolio, and then Vern. And this one particular night was Vern. So it was me, Coolio, and Vern who were up. And Coolio was saying to Vern, "Hey, Vern, tell..." So there were various, kind of videos going around on the internet of Vern, right?
Yeah.
So Coolio said, "Hey, Vern, tell Terry about you and those two chicks." And he was doing that with his arm, and I'm going, whatever. But I knew that Vern was on Celebrity Big Brother to get over that. And obviously, when you're kind of 2'6", like Vern was, you're looking at Walt Disney films, aren't you? And having done, been in those sort of videos, he needed to move on from that. So he didn't want this speaking about. So he went, "Fuck you, Coolio, shut the fuck up." And Coolio was saying, "Oh, fuck that, Vern." Because they knew each other from LA. They were mates. They used to go around playing FIFA and stuff like that together, on the Xboxes and PlayStations and stuff. And he'd say, "No, you tell him." And he'd say, "Hey, Terry, so Vern's there with these two chicks." And Vern's going, "Fuck you, shut the fuck up, Coolio." And Coolio goes, "Oh, fuck you, Vern." And Vern went, "Fuck you, N-word, fuck you." And it's so, because I knew that this was their worst nightmare on the live feed, right? So it's, "Fuck you, N-word, fuck," and he goes, "Fuck you, you fucking sex dwarf." It's like, "Fuck you, N-word." Do you know what? I couldn't breathe. I was laughing that much. I was actually on the floor. You know when you think you're going to die? I couldn't, because I just knew all the, Sebastian Tarquin and Quentin would be in the control. "Get the bird song on!" Because these were their big stars that they were paying big money for. They didn't want them booted out on the first week and the whole thing shut down. But, oh, Jesus, that was funny, Sorry, you can put it out.
I think it's probably all right. We might have a look at it.
But it was like, it was just... This is day three. Day three in the Big Brother house. You thought Shilpa Shetty was bad.
Right, I'll ask you some emergency questions, then it's an easy cut. if we want to go there. I'll try this. What's the most bizarre wrong number text that you've ever received? Have you ever had an unusual text come to you?
Nope.
Okay, that's fine. Got to take a punt. We'll cut that out. That's the only bit we'll cut out. Who or what is your favourite Jacob or Jacobs?
I don't know. You didn't have Jacobs where I grew up.
Jacob's cream crackers.
Oh, cream crackers. I never liked them.
What about Jacob from the Bible, if you're so Catholic?
Jacob. Well, more New Testament, not Old Testament. But Catholics don't read the Bible. It's all in Latin.
Okay, let's try another one.
Jacob Rees-Mogg, did you mean?
Yeah, Jacob Rees-Mogg. I thought you'd go for Jacob Rees-Mogg.
Worked on the word.
I'm going to go early. Terry Christian, this is a question you should have asked on the word. Have you ever tried to suck your own cock, Terry Christian?
No.
No.
I haven't got a neck like a giraffe.
Did you meet John Wayne? Did you interview John Wayne Bobbitt on...
Yes. John Wayne Bobbitt was a weird one.
Was he?
Well, because I interviewed him and he was... He might actually be one of the thickest people I've met in my life. And he was there, because obviously I had to get the story out of him. And what he was famous for, John Wayne Bobbitt, wasn't so much having his penis chopped off by his missus. He was the first one who ever had it sewn back on and it worked again. So he was actually doing a tour of all these gay clubs. And so I was interviewing him, I think it was Fort Lauderdale or one of these places in Florida. And so he was telling me the story, and obviously the rumour was going around that he'd beaten his wife up, Lorena, and that's why she...
Yeah.
And it was, but every time I was talking to him, he kept going, well, I'd been out drinking with my buddy and blah, blah, blah. He said, "I never beat her up." I hadn't even asked him that, and he went, "No, I never beat her up." Whatever he said, he just kept finishing with that. But then when he was telling me the story, it was harrowing, because what happened was she cut it off and then she went off with it in her hand in the car. then drove off in the car, then randomly wound the window down and threw it out on some waste ground. And in the meantime, he'd staunched the bleeding with, I know exactly, look, I was there looking at him in the eyes, he's telling me this. And he staunched the bleeding with a towel. And then he'd been, and his mate who he'd been out drinking with was asleep on the couch. And he woke him up and he said, oh, look, can you give me a lift to the hospital? He can't phone ambulances in the USA, you know, he's like that. He said, my Marine training came in, blah, blah, blah. And he said, and then my friend got up and went to brush his teeth first. went to brush his teeth. And when he got to the hospital, the police had to find it and they only had like 4 hours, you know, or whatever. They had to find it within a certain, so they ended up finding it in the grass, didn't they?
How did they find it?
Well, not using a torch, whatever. Would it have had
they have a dog?
It?
They must have had a special dog that they trained to sniff out cocks.
But yeah, I mean,
probably wasn't even for police work to begin with. Well, we could use this cock dog.
But I mean, but obviously this stuff is quite traumatizing to listen to. But like, everyone's laughing at it. I mean, can you imagine? Can you imagine it? You know, laughing at it. I mean, there was a woman in China. When she did it to her husband, having heard the John Wayne Bobbitt one about him getting it cut off and getting it sewn back on again and it working, she went and shoved her husband's in the, you know, the one of them liquidizer things. A Moulinex manicure. You know, that's spiteful though, isn't it? You know.
Cutting it off is one thing, but...
Yeah.
Putting in a liquid.
You know, I'm women's lib all the way, but fucking hell.
It is interesting that it's somehow a comedy thing. It is, but it is though, isn't it? It's interesting that it's if that was the other way around, there would be absolutely no comedy in it at all.
Oh, it'd be shock horror.
Yeah, but a woman doing it to a man is somehow it's funny. Just cocks are just funny enough to get over any trauma.
Nobody cares about us. That's why.
No, they don't. It's like big cook, little cook. That's They've had their cocks effectively cut off, haven't they? It's a good. I thought of him because you know it's a good way to suck your own cock, isn't it? That's the way around it. At least
this won't be controversial, will it?
It won't. Well, it's very very good for the word. Have you ever seen a ghost, Terry Christian?
No, but I've had some. I've had the willies put up. Sounds terrible. No, but I've kind of had, you know, because obviously when you work on radio for years, you always, you'd have a clairvoyant and you meet these people. And it's been some weird thing. I used to do a radio show with John Ronson as my sidekick. Mm. So I'd always get him on all that, you know, UFOs, spiritualism. I'd set him a special task every night for the next night. Yeah, I'd play the Mission Impossible music, which he then nicked later on. And I went, your mission, should you choose to accept it, John, is to go out and find out if there's such a thing as God. And he was brilliant because then he'd come back to you the next night with like this spiel that was virtually off his head, off the top of his head, about looking at paintings in B&Q. And then he'd come to his conclusion. And then I go, so what is your conclusion? Is there such a thing as God? And he'd go, well, we just don't know. But yeah, so all that stuff, I've had it. I was told by this woman, and this was back in 1988, and she took my keys off me and she said, I can see you traveling all around the world. I was so scared of flying. You know, I didn't have any great traveling ambitions. You know, you'd have to strap me into a seat, you know, to fly to Greece once a year for holiday. That I'd fly all around the world, I'd do this, I'd do that, do the other, that the police would be knocking on my door. Whoa. Everything happened within 18 months of that. So I was on the word, flying, you know, going over to the USA all the time, Hawaii, you know, Jamaica, blah, 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 all the rest of it. And then the police did come knocking on my door because, in fact, it's on Would I Lie to You, which they keep showing on a loop. I wish I had the repeat for that. When me and a mate of mine were like, he was a secret guest on it. We got arrested in Derby as a suspected jewel thieves.
Really?
Yeah, well, not arrested, like surrounded by about eight cars. And they came round to my flat to apologise. The police came round to me because I worked on Radio Derby. Imagine the damage I could have done to them. And meanwhile, I'm like that, this flat, which is above the Halifax Building Society, and I'm like trying to keep the marijuana smoke out of the copper's nose. And Fane going, it's all right, mate, don't worry about it. We never done it.
Very amazing.
You sure you didn't do it? That would be pretty good.
Absolutely positive. Sure? Well, the weird thing is, this was it. We were going down the road and we had donkey jackets on. I don't know what, why. We're both wearing donkey jackets. I think it was semi-trendy at the time. We had trainers with no socks. Now, it wasn't Miami Vice. It was just, you wouldn't do your laundry for it. You'd only do your laundry once every 2 weeks, wouldn't you? So we were both caught in that, you know. So when the cops got us, we said, well, when this jewellery robbery happened, it's about 20 minutes ago. So, well, someone, why would we still be walking around the same place? You know, it's like, as long as they, you know, imagine it, the brains of the operation was the guy 20 minutes later still walking around in the same outfits.
Well, you know, you never know. The police have a very hard job. They do it. They're good, aren't they, the police? Everyone, what's everyone thinking about? No, they're not very popular, the police, are they? So I've noticed. Wonder what they have done. Oh, yeah, now I know. So what's coming up?
Well, another book. Yeah. So I'm actually doing a proper... I've been planning this book for about 30 years. So it's called True Faith, The Ultimate History of Manchester Music. And it was weird because I was interviewed for the Paul Morley book about Tony Wilson. And I first met Tony Wilson back in 1977. And it's weird. God bless Paul. But he's actually written the wrong thing in every quote I gave him. And he recorded it all. And I haven't drunk that much. You know, when you think, well, what's the point of even changing that story? So I just thought to pay tribute to them. But then also the fact that in Manchester, there was so much great black music came out of Manchester, but nobody knows what it is. Number one singles, you know, all sorts. And it's just overlooked. And obviously, you know, the area that I came from, you know, it was all these guys, you know, and it was like, well, how can you overlook them? Why are they never in? And yet you've got people who met at uni for 3 months are on like the tram map of Manchester. Right. And every single book about Manchester music, you know, in terms of as a broadsheet, is written by people who aren't from Manchester.
Yeah.
You know, but always pretending they are. So I'll go and be their nightmare with this one. So Elliot Rashman, who managed Simply Red, is writing the foreword for it. And then I was chatting to Alan Erasmus, you know, he's the only surviving member of the original Factory Club with Tony Wilson, Rob Gretton and Alan Wise. And he's in Lviv at the moment working in a... helping out in a refuge centre.
Okay.
You know, a refugee hostel.
Yeah.
And just sent me a really moving picture that I put on Twitter of a young guy with his family, you know, his kids and his wife, and he's leaving them there and about to go to the front. Alan Erasmus is a great guy. But, selfishly, I'm thinking, don't get killed because I need to do a big interview with you for the book. So all those guys were just amazing that were around in Manchester. We were uncool. It was a bit like Man United before Alex Ferguson took over, where we were so behind Liverpool as a football team. Up until 1978,
Yeah. We
were kind of a mile behind Liverpool and everywhere else. And now it's like, because of this guy who was a bit nuts, Tony Wilson, he was like, he just reinvented the whole place. Yeah. And even when you didn't like him, you, what was irritating about him when he died, you kind of realised that you were always secretly trying to impress him. It was interesting, when I started doing The Word, I actually rang him up to find out how much say you should get in a TV show, you know, if you're the presenter.
Yeah.
Because I was used to being, you know, my boss, if you like, on the radio for 8 years, and I didn't like this idea that I wouldn't be in control, but I wasn't a control freak. And I remember I rang him up, he said, oh, hello, darling. He went, I said, look, Tony, you know, if you're doing a TV show, you know, how much say should you have in what goes on air? And he went, 14.5%. I went, right. I said, okay. And he went, no, 11.5%. I went, thanks, Tony. That's the Jedi mind trick. That no one else could do that. That's how he got New Order to put all their money into the Hacienda for years. You know, they go to a meeting and say, right, we've just come back from America, made 200,000. The Hacienda needs a new roof, and it happens to be about to cost 200,000. Oh, right, shit. So he had this magic about him.
Yeah. Great. Well, that sounds brilliant. And look, you know, it's been fantastic to have you on.
Thank you.
And
got him on Radio 4.
Are you
doing great lives?
Oh, whose great life are you going to do?
Tony Wilson. On March the... Well, I'm recording it March the 23rd, so I don't know when it'll go out. With Matthew Parrish. Last time me and him did an interview, it didn't go well.
Right.
If you think I shouted at Piers Morgan... Hey, you know, so that'll be interesting.
Yeah, have you recorded that already? Or
no, we're doing that on the 23rd. Okay. But obviously it'd be about Tony Wilson, not about Maggie Thatcher like it was last time.
Well, you keep on being Terry Christian.
I'm never sure how to take that. Carry on being Captain Kirk.
Now, it's absolutely fascinating talking to you, and you know, there's more to come, Terry.
Yes,
there's more to come.
Of course.
There is. Ladies and gentlemen, give a massive round of applause, Terry Christian.
Thanks a lot.
Come and see us next week. We've got Jamie Dimitro and Samira Ahmed. Thank you very much. Thanks for coming, guys. You have been listening to Rahulastapur with me, Richard Herring, and my guest, Terry Christian. Thank you very much to Scant Regard for playing the music. I'm indebted to my producer, Ben Walker, and also to my good friend, Chris Evans, not that one. Thank you to everyone at the Square Theatre and all the other nits who help us make this show. I would also like to thank the following people, who are some of the people who backed our Kickstarter campaign. John C., Paul Quelch, Liz Hazelby, Amy LaRoche, Leifa Fenfia, Bob Sausage, Mark Hush, Emma Davies, Jay, Scott Wilkinson, Benjamin Angerer, Michael Paley, Fee Potts, Rich Dixon, Rory McDade, Sarah W., Jean Power, Claire Davies, James Gorman, Julian Cave, Simon Smith, Gorm Ulosso, Carly Reed, Ben from the Far End of the Bar podcast. Don't listen to that podcast. Simon Sweet. You can if you want. George Povey, David and Jenny Moody, Alison Scott, Rach Bowden, Emily Noah, _L. That might be a misprint. Adam Smith, Danny Dyer, not that one, Ian Podcast, James Newton and Kettle. This is a Sky Potato Fuzz and GoFasterStripe.com production. Thank you very much for listening. Go to richherring.com/gigs to find out when Rahulastapur is coming near to you. Please tell your friends about this podcast. Make them listen to it too. The more people who listen, the more money we've got to make more podcasts and stuff like that. So that would be nice, wouldn't it? Thanks for listening. Go away. Bye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Thanks for listening. Go to GoFasterStripe.com for all your Rich Herring download and book needs. Go to richherring.com/gigs to find out if Can I Have My Ball Back is coming near to you. And please listen to as many podcasts on this feed as you possibly can, and make your family and friends and children and strangers, make them listen too. Do get consent from everyone before you make them listen, though. All right, thanks for listening. Go and listen to another one. Bye-bye.